This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Melissa Idris. And joining us is Fuad Rahman. He's the lecturer with, at Nottingham University, Malaysia, and also with Project Dialogue. So much has happened over the last 24 hours and is set to go on for a couple of hours yet, Fuad.
Or longer.
Your first thoughts. I know we've had many conversations about
what was going to happen at this general election. And I think we both were proven to be wrong
very
in our
much
our
so
predictions. Now,
does that pain you?
Does it pain you to be?
Does it pain you to say that you're wrong, gentlemen?
No, I think you're not wrong.
But the results have made up for it. So enough pacifiers there, yeah.
Okay, very, very quickly, Fuad, your sense of what's happened and why it's happened?
Well, the Mahathir factor. I think for the longest time, the Malay votes have been the most enigmatic in the sense that while there were evident and long-standing dissatisfaction with the government, it just never translated to votes. And Anwar tried to do it. He couldn't. He tried to do it twice. But it took somebody like Mahathir with his legacy, with the trust he can offer to the Malay population. And of course, his credentials as a defender of Malay rights as well, right, for decades, to make that shift. So I think his presence, his charisma, and the fact that he's also a senior citizen, right? So seniority counts for a lot in terms of cultural buy-in.
So meaning the fact that he's 93 years old and still on the doing the ceramah circuit and going campaigning really hard on the ground, that you think made a difference?
I think so. It's a testament of semangat. It's a testament of perjuangan.
Is that why he keeps bringing it up in press conferences? He keeps saying, I'm 93.
Yeah.
Well, it does make a difference.
I think to be fair to Anwar Ibrahim and his contributions to this particular day and the results of the GE14 is that when he left UMNO, he chose to set up a multi-racial party. He was able to bridge both a DAP and PAS in terms of their ideological differences, create a middle ground. And through that, an electoral pact that, formed governments in the richest states of the Federation. I mean, that's extraordinary achievements that what he could not do was to have that success at the federal level. Mm-hmm. But what he did at those two states, and in fact, if you remember, initially we had many more states that fell to the Pakatan Rakyat. I think, I wonder what the feeling of the man is, in Sungai Buloh, missing out on this, on the action and having to concede in some sense the limelight to his former nemesis, Tun Dr. Mahathir, must be a very poignant moment for Anwar Ibrahim.
I imagine so, but that's what political game changers tend to be, right? There are just so many questions that you can't resolve. There's so many questions that there are no easy answers to. Mm-hmm. And that's a sign of just how big the change is, right? Because if everything is within a speculation's distance, or everything is sort of, you can kind of sense where things are going, then it's not as profound a change as one might think. But the fact that we're constantly surprised, right? The fact that we're constantly guessing for what might what happen next is a reflection of just how deep and far-reaching the transition is going to be. So
yeah, one of the deep paradoxes of the present situation is that the people who have led the charge against UMNO, against the establishment, are people who created that establishment themselves. I mean, Dr. Mahathir is, Mr. UMNO par excellence. He's the man who shaped the second iteration of the party, right, after its deregistration. UMNO Baru, which is actually the real name of UMNO, is Dr. Mahathir's creation, right? So there's a deep paradox that we're now having an anti-establishment wave by people who were deeply part of the establishment.
Yeah. Well, the question that people are asking, more or less, is if this is the same Mahathir from 30 years ago.
Do you think it is?
I'm not sure. I mean, I like to think so because
a reformed man, is
it? A reformed man, or just someone who's just transformed by the world. Right? The world's a different place now. Mm. And one thing that we do know from, the way that he's established his legacy is that he's always been about the future, right? So sayang IT cinta IT, among other things, right?
Yeah, well, sayang cinta IT. Wow, Fuad, that's a flashback to.
Yeah, we're
going
back.
You're in short pants.
Well, what was also interesting is the fact that he, in a sense, has never lost an election.
Yeah,
never lost an election that he's ran. And, the BBC this morning had kind of had him as Mahathir Mohamad on course to be the world's oldest elected leader. So I do agree with you in a sense that, this has been really he has been the driving factor behind the win of Pakatan Harapan. I also want to bring out a point that Umar Pagan made yesterday about how it really was turned into a presidential campaign halfway through, where it became about two men.
Yep.
It became about Najib and Mahathir. Even though there was a third invisible man, Anwar Ibrahim, in the middle, he was, I guess, not visually there.
And actually, Hadi Awang of PAS, also another man that we need to at some point assess. But I do think that, you know, Mahathir, yeah, he might not have lost any election, but he did preside over a deep fissure in UMNO. He created, through his actions against Anwar Ibrahim, a crisis of legitimacy for UMNO. It's taken 20 years to work itself out fully.
Right.
But, you know, this crisis begins with the Asian financial crisis of the late 90s. And so, and when he resigned, he wasn't at the top of his game. He was a broken man, from all accounts, in the sense that he felt that he lost the party. The party perhaps viewed him as quite toxic to the brand. And so, you know, he's not... So this is a bit of a comeback story as well for Dr. Mahathir, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, ironically, you can tell the story along the lines of old UMNO taking on new UMNO, right? Because the same characters from the crisis are making an appearance and gaining prominence again.
You mean his old gang?
His old gang.
The band is back together again.
But the only underside to that is that it shows how the system has sort of maximized itself. It can only recycle the same personalities, the same kind of energy, and the same kind of rhetoric, right? We haven't seen since 98 or even before that, you know, personalities that would be fresh air, so to speak. I mean, Shahril Hamdan was one of them, touted, but he didn't win. So,
well, so this is the UMNO Youth Exco member who stood but lost, right?
Correct.
Now, because there are people who might be dismayed by saying, well, if nothing's really changed, or that, you know, French expression, the more things change, the more they stay the same kind of feeling, is the fact that this breakthrough has allowed all kinds of other forces, right? Members of the civil society, NGO activists like Maria Chins come in. You'll see Sivarasa at the federal level, you know, in power. And this was a man who set up Swaram and the human rights movement, or was part of the setting up of the human rights movement. So yes, it might be some of the same faces in the vanguard, but behind them, very close behind, are extraordinary new forces that want to rejuvenate the country.
But it's also, Sharad, I think, important to know whether the old guard will still remain active in building a new government, so to speak, right? Or whether it's going to be the people behind the scenes. Because, you know, we don't know what I don't think that, if you're referring to Tun Daim or Rafid Aziz, whether they will be part of, you know, building policy or government going forward. They could have just been there to endorse lend their support to the Cerama circuit, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think change is already happening, right? Like you said, for the reasons you mentioned, like activists, so people who fought in the streets, so to speak, are now going to be ministers, possibly, right, at the highest level of change. So that is quite evident. The question here is, and I think the question on everybody's mind is this the end of the road for UMNO, right?
Do you think it is?
All signs suggest that, because who's the new blood?
Well, okay,
who can do the cleanup work?
So we had heavyweights from Barisan Nasional and UMNO specifically that were defeated in the elections. You know, all the ministers, Sabri Cik, Johari Ghani, Saleh Syed Krua, Rahman Dahlan, Jamin Kebarum, all these big names defeated. So does it speak to, I guess, you know, a need to rejuvenate UMNO, and whether who's left, the people like Hishamuddin and KJ, will they be able to rejuvenate UMNO?
Well, you know, this was actually the subject of remarks made by Karim Razlan on air earlier in the afternoon, when he feels it's possible. He hopes the party, in fact, does it, because both the party and the coalition, both UMNO and Barisan Nasional, need to be the counterweight to a very strong Pakatan Harapan, and that Malaysians as voters, as citizens, cannot rely on one or the other side to be saviors. You know, we need competitive politics. We need good quality on both sides of the aisle. Now, you know, we were talking earlier about whether this is the old Mahathir or the new Mahathir. We have a clip that's been circulating in social media, and it's a speech that Tun Dr. Mahathir made some 20 years ago.
Pada tahun 2020, UMNO mungkin tidak berkuasa lagi. kerana ditolak oleh orang Melayu sendiri, kerana bosan dengan politik wang yang diamalkan oleh UMNO. Dan di kalangan UMNO pula, ahli-ahli UMNO, pemimpin-pemimpin UMNO akan merebut kuasa sehingga tidak ada lagi apa nama perjuangan untuk parti, untuk bangsa, tetapi perjuangan hanyalah untuk mendapat tempat bagi diri sendiri. Dengan itu, pengundi akan rasa bosan dengan UMNO dan mereka akan tolak UMNO. Saya fikir 2020 is the maximum lah UMNO boleh pergi. Saya fikir belum sampai itu pun kita akan lihat UMNO kualitinya merosot, sokongan kepadanya juga merosot. Apabila UMNO lemah, maka campuran Barisan Nasional ini juga akan jadi lemah. Sebabnya Barisan Nasional ini kuat sekarang ini ialah kerana UMNO menjadi trustnya yang kuat. Tetapi apabila UMNO sudah lemah, ditolak oleh orang Melayu, maka Barisan Nasional juga akan runtuh. Malangnya, yang akan mengganti bukanlah parti lawan yang kita tengok sekarang ni. Kerana yang lain juga, parti lain juga, parti Melayu yang lain juga tidak akan mendapat sokongan daripada orang Melayu sendiri.
That was Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, not speaking in recent times, but 20 years ago, projecting into the future, saying by 2020, we're just 2 years short of 2020, predicting the demise of UMNO.
And he missed it by 2 years. Actually. He did say Barisan Nasional as well.
And so it's an extraordinary. So you know, we know that Dayim Zainuddin, the former finance minister, is often referred to as the Oracle. But my goodness, I mean, if this was not Oracle-like, I don't know what is. What do you think he was able, and why was he able to see this coming, Fuad? What do you think?
Because at that point, if you think about 20 years ago, the problem was quite plain for everybody to see. The money politics that dominated, and that was one of the rifts right between Anwar and Mahathir, right, in terms of who's been dishing out more, right? So it was a point of polarization for the party, and I think that was brought up subsequently as well, right, every time that UMNO appeared to have been at an impasse. So he was just pointing out something that actually everybody could have foreseen, right? Because the question at that point was, how much longer could UMNO hang on to the Malay populace? As soon as they lost the urban Malay votes, then it was already kind of game over already, right? So, yeah, it was in the making.
You know, I think one of the things that impresses one about Tun is a certain kind of clarity of vision and conviction that he holds about his sense of what is going on, right? So maybe this is his training as a medical professional, right? I mean, doctors
diagnosing the problem.
They see the patient and they have to come up with a sense of what's going wrong and what can be done to change it. But he failed, right? He failed quite miserably in altering the course of UMNO. If he could see it 20 years ago, why wasn't he able to, recalibrate UMNO's culture, steer it in the right direction, and so on and so forth?
Yeah, perhaps he was too deep into it.
Yeah, I mean, to Insula, that's a good point. I do want to take a note now and see, well, what happens to UMNO going forward, right? You need, so when Mahathir was, steering the ship at UMNO, you had this statesman-like, strong leader right at the helm. So what happens now to UMNO? You're going to need the same kind of strength and leadership right at the top, which I think is crucial for the survival of the party.
And we haven't had that for a while, right? Because Najib is just not that strong man. He doesn't have the
grassroots support
or even just the persona. If you think about the messaging that he had in leading up to the elections, right? The message was quite basically, vote for us, we'll give you more. Whereas for Mahathir from day one, it's like, we'll win this. You know, we'll win this hands down. And he kept saying that, right? So I think if you're on the fence and you're torn between these two presidential-like candidates, right? Are you going to go for someone who's always half-stepping, who's always sort of like, it's got one foot outside the campaign, or you want to go with somebody who's been there, done that, and is quite certain he's going to win? So I think the aura of just being in control of your destiny, which Mahathir shows, I think swayed a lot of fan sitters.
What about the concession speech by, I'm using air quotes here, concession speech by Najib Razak today? It suggested that, okay, they've lost this time, they could still recoup their forces and present Malaysians in the future with a choice, right? And maybe Malaysians would return them. But which are aspirational type statements, right? The question really is, do they have the capacity to actually do that? And is he the man to do it? I'm sure there's a very strong blame game going on, you know, right now. You know, was Najib Razak toxic to UMNO, especially because of those stories and narratives about money politics and, you know, the misuse of money in 1MDB and all these allegations that swirled around him? Is he the man to do it? Or would it be a Zaid Hamidi? Or would it be a Khairi Jamaluddin, much
younger
man? Or a
Hishamuddin, in fact, you know, still in the game, right?
Yeah, it didn't seem like he made a good impression from his so-called concession speech. I think from what I gathered, the sentiment is that it was churlish and he wasn't quite present. His voice broke at parts when he was trying to utter the words. So it looked like it was a very, very tough pill for him to swallow. And it didn't seem like he was in control of his messaging. And, you know, since then, we've only heard from him once. And how many times have we heard from Mahathir?
Yeah.
Right, at least four or five
constantly
times.
Constantly throughout the night, 3 a.m. press conferences.
Yeah, so Mahathir was directing the narrative, whereas Najib was nowhere to be found, right? And where was Najib was became a kind of meme-like hashtag thing, right, across social media.
I didn't see that.
So it's like, but whereas Mahathir was just present and he assured everyone at the time of uncertainty that he had everything under control, and that only came with the gravitas of being in politics for that long, you know.
Okay, you can always be part of this conversation. Remember, you can tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. We're talking about Dr. Mahathir, his prognostications. I say 20 years ago, he said in 2020, UMNO might cease as a leading party in this country. Tell us what you think. We'll be back. BFM 89.9.
Bole for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome back to our coverage of G14. It's Aftermath. We're going to take you all the way until we have a new government in Putrajaya. I'm Sharad Kutin, with me Melissa Idris, and with us Fuad Rahmat. He's a lecturer at Nottingham University, Malaysia, and also with a Project Dialogue. Now we have Rizal Zain, who's tweeted in. He says, I'm listening from Pahang, an opposition state under Barisan Nasional. What a curious syntax. What
sounds so strange. Gotta get used to that. Yeah.
Okay. Now, also, Choi YC, he's sent us a tweet, says, poor pass, they have 18 parliamentary seats and 37 seats in Kelantan and 22 in the state assemblies of Kelantan and Terengganu, and nobody's talking about them. And I'm not quite sure if nobody's talking about them.
Well, we haven't been. Now, to be fair to his comment, we haven't been focusing on PAS or Gagasan Sejahtera all that much, given what we've been really seeing with Pakatan Harapan and Barisan Nasional.
Now, they actually did much better than was anticipated. Mm-hmm. You know, to get close to 20 seats, what they got in the last elections, general elections, that is quite extraordinary. Mm-hmm. The fact that they held Kelantan and have gained Terengganu and are playing kingmaker roles potentially in two other states. Now that, in fact, is quite significant, isn't it, Fuad?
Yeah, I think so. And I think they wrote the chorus of anti-Najib sentiments as well, but offering an Islamic alternative, which is compelling for a lot of Malays too. So they were tapping into that channel of discontent.
Right, and so their capacity maybe to shape and alter governance, let's say in the states of Perak and Kedah, tilting it more towards Islamic governance in together with UMNO, to what extent will they reshape UMNO on a state level? Maybe they will give UMNO a new identity. UMNO might shift closer to their end of the spectrum. UMNO, because it seemed to be, while religiously minded, much more secular in its orientation, more pragmatic in its orientation.
So you know how before the elections, in the run up to the elections, there was a lot of talk about, you know, a green tsunami, or, you know, having talks of PAS and UMNO forming a Malay Muslim only government and all that. Do you think any of that, plus having a PAS as a third corner to make it into a three corner fight? I mean, in hindsight, looking at all this, did PAS have any missteps along the way in achieving what they had hoped would be, you know, the green tsunami?
It seemed to me like their main grudge was with Amanah, and I think their priority was to do a strong showing against them in Kelantan. I think that was, it seemed to me that, at least from what I gathered, especially in the grassroots, that was what they wanted to attain first. Mm. On their relationship with UMNO, it's interesting now because UMNO requires a strong partner for the coalition. And given that MCA, MIC and Gerakan are pretty much dead now, right? And not many people have talked about them either, right? It seems like that's the only eventual outcome that we can see between the two of them, right? They have actually something to gain from each other at this point, at least for the near future.
Before we go to you know, the next bulletin in the morning of the afternoon, I did it again.
You did it again.
It's been a long night.
long day's journey to
tonight.
He's
still stuck in the morning, I think.
Is the question of Tun Dr. Mahathir. He's on the way to the palace. He's going to be sworn in as the next prime minister, the seventh prime minister of Malaysia. He was our fourth prime minister. Yep. But this time around, he's going in as a transitionary figure. He's there, and it was already announced that after him would be Anwar Ibrahim. Once Anwar was out of prison, got the pardon, went through a set of elections, that transition, do you believe, Fuad, that this could be a significant period, even though it's transitory in nature?
Significant and anxious, because a lot of things can happen in between that, right? And there's so many question marks. So I think this is the beginning of something different. But and I'm enjoying the honeymoon, right? But that transition is going to be anxious because, you know, there are a lot of murmurs about the internal dynamics within PKR as well, right? And that hasn't been resolved. So we'll see how it goes. But at this point, what people are focusing is the immediate goal: transition, new government, and a new Malaysia, hopefully.
In fact, we have got quite a few statements coming out with the transition. Wishes from both sides of the political divide, you know, in terms saying that, you know, we want and hope for a peaceful transition. In fact, Shahid Farooqi, the constitutional lawyer, he was on Astro Bwani earlier this afternoon saying that Malaysia might become an exemplar for the third world, showing the possibilities of power transitions without violence.
Very optimistic. Without,
yeah. And that, you know, in some ways you have to credit the Malaysian public for its reasonably sober frame of mind, you know, that has allowed this transition to happen.
I think something has to be said about the virtues of changing slowly, because sometimes the most drastic and fast changes can be the most disappointing.
Okay, we're coming up to the next bulletin of the evening with Sabrina Maglin is poised at the mic. And then we'll be back with more news and analysis. Remember, Tun Dr. Mahathir and the Pakatan Harapan leadership on their way to the Istana to meet the His Royal Highness the Agong in order to be sworn in as the next government of Malaysia. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.